just that kind of thing that sort of pushed me in the direction either I was going to die or I was going to have a life change.
Lucy, I'm home.
Welcome back to Having a Ball podcast. And today is a very special episode of our podcast. We have Keith Thibodeau, of course, of I Love Lucy and played Little Ricky. And it's really an honor to have you. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me, ladies.
What have you got there?
A doggy.
Whose is it?
Mine.
Yours?
Uh-huh.
Is that one of Billy Palmer's six puppies? Oh, now, honey, listen, I'm sorry. It's a very sweet little puppy, but I'm afraid we're not going to be able to keep it.
Why not?
Well, for one thing, dear, our house is too small for a dog.
But, Mommy, it's a small dog.
Well, I know. But he's going to grow bigger.
Maybe our house will grow bigger, too.
In 2020, I think our world has, you know, turned upside down a little bit. And I know that you have a school in Mississippi, right?
That's right.
Was that running through the entirety of the pandemic, or did you guys kind of have to take a break?
Well, we did. We had to have a short break that was several months, and then we had kind of a separate little. We have a separate workshop that we have every July that attracts normally between like 300 and 400 dancers from all over the world.
Wow.
We had to adjust a few things because we couldn't have it at the same location that we normally have it at the university. So we had to have it at a hotel, and we used our studios, and it worked out good. It worked out good. We had some people who donated some space to us to have it. But all in all, I mean, you know, we're really good, and we've thrived, and God has taken care of us. So it's a good thing.
And that's interesting, because when I was, researching you and seeing the school that you run, I found it fascinating that from what I can see, it's built as the first of Dancing for Christ type of establishment. How did that come about?
Well, it came about because, you know, my wife and I are both Christians and believers. And I became a believer before my wife. We were kind of nominal Christians and just, you know, kind of just said, well, we're not Buddhist, we're not Mormon, we're not, you know, this or that. We're Christian, you know. I was raised Catholic, and but anyway, I was born again in 1974, and then my wife was born again later on at one of David and the Giants, which is my band, one of our meetings. And so she would travel with us she knew us when we were a regular rock band. And then she also saw the change when we all became Christians and we became a Christian rock band. So we started traveling all over the U.S. and she saw how you can use music for the Lord. And right. We saw that it was in Psalms that you could do that and praise his name with the music, praise his name with the dance, Psalm 140, 49, 150. And so she looked for a way in a time when she could break away from her ballet company, which was at the time Mississippi Ballet, Ballet Mississippi. And so she resigned at a particular time and felt like it was time to try to do this pioneering effort of starting a Christian ballet company.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
That's incredible. Yeah. And I do have another question. Do you still play either, you know, the band or just any band, you know, do you still play for fun?
I do. I don't really play for fun. I play with the band.
Okay.
And, but we play, you know, various like we're going to be playing in Indiana coming up. We're playing in South Mississippi. We did a 40th anniversary reunion, not a reunion, but a 40th anniversary David and the Giants concert in St. Louis about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I believe. And then we've been to the Philippines. We did like a 2 week wow. tour of the Philippines with the band. So yeah, we do this and that, you know.
And really when you first became born again, was that from their childhood being that of a child star and perhaps some sort of being lost afterwards and finding a purpose later on in your life?
Well, the cause of it, you know, is obviously I was lost. I knew about God, but I didn't know God. Mm-hmm. And my parents separated and eventually divorced when I was 15 years old. So that was a huge, huge part in my anger toward God at that. And then my consequential coming to the Lord after I joined the rock band and got into the sex, drugs, and rock and roll scene and right. The drugs and my friends would do drugs and, you know, just the, you know, the problems that you would face. And then I got into, I talk about in my book, Life After Lucy.
Yes.
I wrote a book in 1994 and, talk about my, you know, depression, clinical depression, which is now known as clinical depression and suicidal thoughts. And,
right.
Just that kind of thing that sort of pushed me in the direction either I was going to die or I was going to have a life change. And thank the Lord that he came into my life. Jesus came into my life in 1974 and revealed himself to me. And I believed in him. And my life began to change from that point on.
Yeah, that's really when you speak of sort of going into a depressive mode, suicidal thoughts, things like that. People are so open about it now. People are so comfortable speaking of it now, but you've been speaking about it for ages because, you know, it was ever present in your life and perhaps you masked it in other ways. So, I mean, you were ahead of your time with that, but I think that's why I think your story is really a great one. We'll you know, hit you with all the I Love Lucy stuff, of course, but I think your story alone is really one of, you know, pushing through whatever it is you were feeling or getting yourself into to a light at the end of the tunnel, which I think is really great. And I can see it on you, on your face, that you are living there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's not something that I'm putting on or I'm trying to, you know, I'm some sort of, you know, cultish, hypnotic trance or something, you know?
Yeah.
It's just my life, you know?
It's really important to have something, you know, and I don't know what all of our believers are, but I know that being a Christian myself has helped me through countless many things. I mean, even now, and it's just a strong base, you know, there's that whole building a strong foundation and going from there. And so, I mean, I think that's just so incredible that you found that when you needed to. I mean, God's always there. So, but that you were willing and open to receive him at that point. And so that's really great.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Well, I mean, what, you know, when I was in like the clinical depression and the suicidal thoughts back in those days, like you mentioned, you know, it wasn't something that people talked about.
Right.
It was something, in fact, and then the interesting thing about it, you know, I never had any kind of drugs or any kind of counseling to go along with all that or ended up in a mental institution like I should have. but it was just God's hand on me through the whole thing and sort of leading me and guiding me and this miracle and that miracle of sort. And so that's why I'm here.
That's really awesome. It's, and I, like I said, I think your story could really, whoever listens, you might be tuning in for Lucy stuff, but this can also help somebody, because maybe somebody who struggles knows it's going to be okay. I mean, you could probably attest to you're going to be okay, no matter how much you feel like you're drowning sometimes. Right. And so your story is that. And so, of course, your story does begin at a very young age. I mean, before we even started speaking, the idea of a two-year-old playing drums or a three-year-old professionally is mind-boggling, because you can barely get them to sit down when you want at 2 or 3 years old and you are a professional drummer. So if you could, a little bit of your journey, I'm sure you've told it countless times, but it's a fascinating one.
Well, you know, I began playing drums at around 2 years old, and began on trash cans in the backyard and knives and forks, you know, the whole normal bit. That led, you know, a neighbor lady to hear me playing on the trash cans. And she told my parents about, you know, I was making rhythm. This little kid was making rhythm on the trash cans. And she said, you need to get your son a drum. So my dad got me a little toy drum. And then from that point on, it just morphed into more and more and more. And he finally got me a real drum. And I would be invited to Kiwanis Club meetings, different functions in town, high school things. And began to be known as this little drummer boy. And eventually, a man named Horace Height, who yes. had a show, you know, some people might, you know, that are like 90 years old might remember him. he had a show called the Horace Height Swift Premium Hour.
Okay.
And it was a big band variety show that toured all over the U.S. and Canada. And his show had also like a little side show, which he would have like a little amateur contest, like a Ted Mack amateur hour type of thing, where he would, you know, feature local talent, and then you would win, you know, somebody would win and then they'd get a prize or whatever. So he came to my hometown and my dad entered me in. My uncle actually entered me in, told my dad about it. And I entered the show in his talent contest and won that particular one in Lafayette, Louisiana. And that was kind of the beginning of my showbiz, big time showbiz career. My dad had asked Horace if I had any future in the show business, and he told my dad he didn't think I did. You know, they already had a young drummer on the show, who was about 12 years old, and he said, we don't really need another, you know, young drummer because we've already got one. So then 2 weeks later he called and asked my dad if we would join the show, because they had such a big feedback from my appearance that people were really wanting me to be on his show. So he brought me on the show as a regular. My dad quit his job at United Gas Company in Louisiana and started touring across the nation in Canada with the show as a regular.
That's a lot of work at such a young age.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I had to leave my mom and, you know, my brother.
Your life.
Yeah, my life, little life, you know, young life. And, but it was... It ended up in California, in LA, and that's when the audition came. Whoop.
I love you true and true, Valentina. Valentina, love me too, please do.
feel during that young life of yours, perhaps not at the moment, but looking back, a lot of pressure that was placed upon you because you were now a starring role on one of the largest, you know, shows ever, that perhaps did things depend upon you to continue being on the show?
Yeah. I mean, I went through several, you know, sort of emotional type, the pressure, like you say, you know, sort of kind of got to me in my young age, and I began to stutter, you know, my lines. Yeah. And then I also, I mean, I just had some emotional type things, and Lucy gave me a week or two weeks off, and I had to have speech therapy, and they even had a hypnotist.
I saw that. I read that. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, you know, in my dressing room, do some of that stuff, you know, which as a Christian later on in life, I really, you know, I believe that's part of the, you know, something that I should not have been in, but it was what they thought was something that would be beneficial, you know? So that said, I just continued to work through all that.
Right. And did you feel like perhaps at any time, because I think I've seen interviews where you speak of forgiving your father later in life from various things that went on, but perhaps the beginning, did you feel pushed? Did you feel like I just wanted to be a regular kid, but I'm being pushed in a direction that should be for grownups perhaps?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've done your homework. I had a lot of unforgiveness from my dad, not only because of that, but because of, you know, his relationship with my mom, and mm-hmm. Had an affair and had a child by that affair and broke our family up. And so these are things that I really had unforgiveness in my heart. And the point that my dad pushed me and sort of lived his life. His nickname before all this started with me was Hollywood in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And so they used to call him Hollywood. And like that was his nickname. And he was always a dapper dresser, and, you know.
So he lived vicariously through you, you'd say.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess you could say that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And he loved show business, and he loved the whole, you know, he ended up working at Desilu.
Public relations, I think.
Public relations, mm-hmm. Right. George Murphy, he worked under George, who worked for Desilu at the time, and was great friends with Desi Sr., and would go to Palm Springs and hang out with Desi, and Desi would have all these women, and they right. would try to hide the women from Lucy and all these different things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I did want to ask, during this whole time, was there anyone in particular, family or not, that you felt was a support at this time that was really, you know, just there to either, you know,
like in his corner?
Yeah, yeah, in your corner, rooting for you. Did you have anyone that was a support for you?
You're talking about when I was on the show or after? Mm-hmm.
Really just as a child actor, in general. So it could be on the show, after the show. Was there anyone in particular that kind of just was like, you know, I'm here for you, here, I'm a support for you? Or were you kind of just on your own island?
I was basically on my own island, but, you know, on the show, Desi Sr. was, I could identify with him more so than I could with Lucy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was a percussionist like I was, and he was Latin and had a foreign heritage, and being a Cajun, you know, the Cajuns are kind of like foreign, they're like a foreign country, you know, a lot of French heritage. And, mm-hmm. So I kind of identified with him more, and he was a very generous person. And but I didn't really have anybody in particular that my mother was more of a normal, you know, she just wanted to be a housewife. I'm the oldest of six children. So, you know, she would hang out with, you know, her friends and, you know, we had Jewish neighbors in our neighborhood, and it was just a normal kind of like, they'd come over for coffee and talk, you know, talk about all different topics. And I used to love just being normal and going out playing, you know, with my friends.
And so I think I've seen you speak of kind of the both ends of the spectrums when you went to visit Lucy's home, you know, the opulence of Beverly Hills and things like that. And then kind of going back to the Valley. Now I'm in California, so I know what the Valley is. So what did that do to you in your mind as a child? Kind of going back and forth from, you know, sparkling big to, you know, just normal everyday living.
Well, it was kind of like having a job. You know, my job was to act, and you know, my normal life was to have fun as a kid and to do things that normal kids do. You know, and in the Valley, I had that life, that normal life. And then when I went to Beverly Hills, a lot of times I didn't really want to go. I told my dad, you know, I didn't really want to go. I mean, I was hanging out with my friends. We were having great, you know, like a summer, you know, whatever, we were doing things and going to the beach or whatever, just hanging out, playing baseball or whatever. And then my dad would say, well, Lucy said, Desi Jr. wants you to come over for the weekend or whatever. So I would have to kind of like drop everything and kind of like, okay, go over there. And I kind of reluctantly went there, but every time I went to their home, I always got along great with the kids, with Desi Jr. and Lucy. And, you know, we would have fun. We grew up together. We were like brothers and sisters to a certain extent, but it was a different kind of life, expectations, manners, etiquette, you know, to be in that arena as opposed to the normal kid arena in the Valley, you know.
And so after you did Lucy, then you moved on to the Andy Griffith Show. Was that immediate, or was there like a lull where you didn't have anything to do?
I think I was like on the unemployment line for a couple of
at 9 years old.
I was collecting unemployment for a little short while in between there, and yet 9 years old. That's right. And but you know, my you know, I guess because I was signed to Desi Lu Studios for a 7-year contract, they sort of like kind of halfway fulfilled it through. You know, I had a small part on the Andy Griffith Show. I played Johnny Paul Jason, who was Opie's best friend on the show. I was on about 12 episodes, and I thoroughly enjoyed, you know, being on that show. That show, you know, it was filmed different. It was a whole different story. It was a whole different bunch of people. And I really did enjoy my time just being on that show in Hollywood. It wasn't as much pressure, let's put it that way.
So it's kind of like what the Mayberry was on TV. He kind of continued being the same people off screen.
They did, yeah. They basically were kind of like who they were, and they would play checkers and chess in the makeup department, and Andy would strum guitar and play gospel hymns, and they just kind of like, it was just this old folksy kind of Southern vibe, which I like because originally that's where I came from, was the South. And so I'd always, in California, I always dreamed about living in the South. And unfortunately, how I got back to the South from California was through my mom and dad's marriage, separation and divorce. So that was the fortunate thing about that. But I'd always loved, you know, you know, my grandparents who were from Lafayette, and I just looked up to, you know, and another thing, when we moved from from California to back to Louisiana from my mom and dad's divorce, my aunts and uncles took us in, took our family in, mm-hmm. And supported us and cooked for us. And just, you know, my mother didn't have a job. She had to go back to school. I think she went to secretarial school and was trying to make some money, you know, because back in those days, I mean, we didn't have anything.
You know? And you had five other siblings, right?
And I had five younger brothers and sisters.
Wow. Wow. So for the television show, I think Ziva, you're a fan of the Andy Griffith Show.
I am. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of the Andy Griffith Show.
Yeah.
I actually, on the list of shows, now please, all of my followers, don't hate me, but that is my go-to show when I just need
like a pick me up.
I don't know. It's just such a feel good show. And I can't just, there's so many times where it's just like, oh, I wonder what it would have been like to be either someplace like that or even on set, you know, because I have also read that it's just, that it was almost a continuation of Mayberry, you know, that it was just a more relaxed set. And so I did want to ask, I know you touched on some of the few things that you liked. Do you have like a favorite memory, either, you know, a favorite scene or a favorite thing that happened during the filming of that show specifically?
Andy, well, I mean, you know, when the last show that I was on was Opie Learns to Dance, or it was like, this dance, and he didn't know how to dance, and Johnny Paul, my character, you know, took his girlfriend to the dance because he wouldn't go, and so I said, well, I'll take you, Sharon, you know. Mm-hmm. and it was a color Andy Griffith, which I don't normally like to watch color Andy Griffith. I like the black and whites. Mm-hmm. I was on mostly black and whites. But
yeah, it's like when we watch Lucy, it's very uncomfortable to watch it in color, like put it back.
Yeah. It's just that kind of a thing. But I just loved hanging out with Ron. We'd hang out at the commissary and eat a hamburger, and Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore would be in the next booth.
Wow. And I'm just picturing kind of normal, that.
Yeah, it was a normal thing. I mean, and you know, Dick Van Dyke show was filmed next door to the Isle of Lucy show.
Right.
And then when the Andy Griffith show was going on, you know, on our time off, you know, Ron and I, we would, you know, play catch, you know, hang out, play around the set. We had the same teacher. You know, you have to have a teacher a tutor,
right?
So we had, you know, a set tutor, and her name was Catherine Barker. So we both had the same tutor on the Isle of Lucy show. She was my tutor. And on the Andy Griffith show later on, she was his tutor. And before I was on the show, she actually would tell Ron stories of me, you know, because she was my tutor. And so when I eventually got on the show, he kind of knew of me through her, and we became really good friends on the set. I didn't hang out with him much because he was like 3 years younger than me. So off the set, we weren't really friends, but on the set,
big age difference at that age.
It is, yeah.
He
when you're older, it's nothing. Yeah. But at that time, for sure.
And I think I've seen you mention that even back then, you could tell Ron Howard had that director's bug kind of on the set, as even as a child.
Yeah, we had one little episode where we were, this is kind of almost toward the end of my stint on the show before my parents divorced and we left. That we would have like sets or there would be like, we would be on the set and we'd have a scene and we actually would give the director of the show. I forgot who the director was, whether it was Howard Morris at that time or someone else. I don't know. But we said, well, look, you know, we said a line one way. They wanted us to say a line one way. And we said, well, you know, a kid wouldn't say it like that.
Yeah.
And so we would kind of give him like, we were kind of like putting input, you know, doing input in there, you know, which was kind of cool. And that was kind of a neat, and I could see, you know, Ron had that, you know, that kind of thing, interest.
Yeah. Even back then. Yeah.
Even back then. Yeah. And we all did, you know, but I mean, we all felt like, well, this is cool. We're giving input, you know, here.
And so on your I Love Lucy, you know, now that we circle back to that, your, I don't know if you're ever asked as much your kind of the dynamic or the relationship with Bill and Vivian, where this kind of like when they said cut, everyone went their own way, or did you ever have any sort of relationship with them, after the camera stopped?
Yeah, I mean, it was a working relationship on the Out of Lucy show, mm-hmm. except for my relationship with Lucy and Desi, which was off the set too, a lot. And so with Viv and Fred, or Vivian and William, or Bill Frawley, they, you know, it was a very good working relationship, a very amiable, very friendly, very sort of like you're part of our team type of thing, you know.
Yeah,
that's what it was. I mean, even when I first joined the show as a kid, I mean, I was like 5 years old, I called Lucy Miss Ball, and she said, don't call me that, you know. Call me Lucy, call, you know, Desi, call Viv and Bill, you know. Don't call us by, you know. And then I heard on her last show that she did, I think it was like Lucy, Life with Lucy or something like that.
Yes.
Yes.
She, you know, people would come up and call her Lucy, and she was like the exact opposite. She's, you know, I'm Miss Ball, you know.
Yeah.
So it was like this total 180-degree turn from the earlier days and how she sort of morphed, you know. And,
you know, it's funny you say that. I think we just spoke of that not too long ago, because I visited the Palm Springs, you know, the hotel that once was owned by Desi Arnaz.
Indian Wells.
And yeah. Although it's no longer part of that, they still kind of keep, you know, the photographs up there, kind of give you that feel. And so as I was walking through, and you see these images where they're both young, and during the I Love Lucy heyday, she has, Lucy herself has a more softer tone, even through photos, that when you fast forward to maybe the late 60s, where she's doing promotions for other Lucy programs, you can kind of feel the sternness and the shift immediate after her divorce and show went off the air. I wondered if you noticed something like that, or if that's what you were alluding to.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed, I think, you know, she didn't really need to do, in my estimation, she didn't really need to do that, any show. I mean, she did Here's Lucy, which was good. And, you know, those shows, but I think later on in life, when she got older and, you know, her voice just became, she didn't have that Lucy voice. It was like this low kind of gravelly
smoker's
voice, which was not people didn't identify with that. And I don't think people identified with the fact that she was not the Lucy character.
Yes.
She was, she was like you say, stern, and she really was a no nonsense kind of person. And I would say that, but there was a soft side to her too that people, you know, didn't know. And we went over back in the early 80s, we went, when I was playing with my band, David and the Giants, we went to LA, and my sister and my daughter, Tara, who was at that time like 2 years old, and my wife, they wanted me to go to Lucy's house. So we went, have I told this story?
No, but we've heard it before. And actually I was going to ask you about that. So it's funny that you start telling it.
Well, we drove up to the house, you know, we were in town. I was, like I said, I was playing with my band and went up to the house, and they wanted me to go in there. I didn't really want to go because I know how people are. You know, you go knock on someone's door just, yeah, you know, randomly, they're not going to just, you know, they're going to say nobody's here or whatever. The maid know you. So I went up to the door, and of course there was a foreign maid, and I said I was Keith Thibodeau and I was looking for Desi Jr. You know, and she goes, you know, just shooed me off, and you know, nobody's here like that. And so I got back in the car. I said, well, that's it, you know, let's just go. And they said, no, you need to write a note or something. You need to let them know who you are. And I said, oh gosh. And so then I wrote a note and said, this is Keith and looking for Desi, blah, blah, blah. So I went to the door, knocked on the door again, gave it to the maid, and the maid closes the door and goes back in. And then I get back in the car. I said, okay, I did it. And there's buses, tour buses with fans. And they're all, you know, taking pictures and stuff. And all of a sudden, Lucy herself runs out of the house from the side door and starts waving her hands, you know.
And imagine her in one of those robes that she's.
I mean, it was like, stop, you know, she was saying, come back in. She saw the note, you know, the maid gave her the note. And so we all got out of the car, ran out of the car. And one of the fans knocked on the window and said, they couldn't believe it. Here's Lucy out there, you know, in full color. And here, and who are these people that she's saying to come back in? She goes, they knocked on our window and on the car and said, well, who are you? And I said, well, I'm Little Ricky. And they go, Little Ricky. So it was like this big, you know, chaos. We went back in the house and we had a great time, you know, visiting with her. It happened to be her birthday of all things. And she was all by herself, which I thought was kind of interesting. And
I can't imagine just the idea of Lucy spending her birthday by herself, but I mean,
but, you know, she, the way she did things, she was very dramatic. And so mm-hmm. She has this spiral staircase in the middle of her home that used to be there. They've changed the home, but as you enter in on the side door, which was where the cars were parked, you know, in the gate, and you go back in the back. But so she went back in the house. We went back, and the maid, we had the door open, and Lucy is standing at the front door next to the spiral staircase with her hands like wide open, like not like, saying a word, just come to me.
It's like the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, here we go with the dramatic thing, you know? And it was interesting. So she said that she was proud. She had seen me on some shows and different talk shows and whatnot, and was had heard a lot of good things, you know, with the band and with, you know, by that time I was married, and our daughter, Tara, who was at the time 2 years old, she was like talking nonstop. And Lucy said, you know, this child must have a vocabulary of 200 words. You know, she was just amazed at our daughter, you know, talking, you know, and but it was a very surreal kind of a day. You know, we spent about an hour visiting with her.
And that was the last time you saw her, right?
No, I actually saw her again.
Okay.
At Desi's funeral.
Oh, okay.
So Desi Senior, I went to his funeral. My father and I went to his funeral, and then they had a get together. So Dino Martin, Desi Junior, Billy Henchy, they were all there. Danny Thomas was there, and so they had a get together at their at Desi's home in Del Mar, and that was basically the last time I, you know, she was very. She was kind of disturbed and very distraught, you know, obviously, you know, at the death of Desi, and it was such a big thing in her life, you know. He was the love of her life, you know.
Yes.
And you know, Gary, the husband, never really, you know, I mean, he was her husband, but, you know, that was more the hurt in her life was from him, you know.
Yes, there was a Barbara Walters interview where she's with Gary, and you can see immediate that, you know, the conversation shifts to Desi. So that lasted till the end of time for her, you know, even though she was remarried.
Yeah.
You were talking about Desi. I was just wondering, do you, Desi and Rice Jr., are you still in contact with anyone? From those days, so either I Love Lucy, so or you know, not I Love, but like Lucy Arnaz, or I can't remember his name, but anyone from that time.
Or
Ron Howard, there you go. I'm sorry, I
okay, no to Ron Howard. I haven't seen him since the show, but yes to both Lucy and Desi. I've stayed in touch. Mainly with Desi, because, you know, I was best friends with him, and we actually talk occasionally, you know, and I talked to him not too long ago, and every time we talk, we'll end up talking 2 hours, you know. We have a lot of catching up to do, and we have a lot to talk about, but with Lucy, it's more business and more different things that come up that she wants to talk with me about. And, but you know, I grew up with them, and, you know,
what's interesting is that you both have dance studios, correct? Both Desi also is sort of in that business in Nevada.
He did. His wife, passed away a couple of years ago. They have a school. I really don't know if they still have that school, but they might. Mm-hmm. But his daughter might be helping with that. But really, you know, it is strange. It is strange, the similarities between Desi and I. We're kind of like, we both have a lot of in common, but then again, we don't, you know. So it's just really weird.
Yeah, because I think you had not only the bonding of, you know, the families and of the show and just Lucy, but also personal stuff. You probably helped each other through things with each other's parents and perhaps stardom at a young age and living through Hollywood lifestyle, which I think I'm not sure if that's something that you wanted to run away from. Did you ever feel like you embraced the life of Hollywood?
Well, I mean, you know, I think Desi, you know, really kind of got a taste of that after his he kind of got soured on some things with Hollywood and sort of, you know, knew through different, you know, I don't want to speak for him, but more of his searching and things, you know, he, mm-hmm. you know, we see it for what it is. I mean, we, you know, at least I do. And he does, and but I don't really look at myself as like Hollywood, but I understand the territory, mm-hmm. and I understand, you know, like even with other child stars that I've met throughout the years. I mean, we have an instant rapport, even though I may not have ever met him before. We have that instant, you know, like
a common bond.
Common bond, you know, and it's like we instantly are get along. You know, it's just kind of funny, you know.
Did you want to run away from the little Ricky character? Because I'm sure countless times you've heard that. So I wonder if there was a moment where you kind of ever resented the character, or you just forever, that's who you want to always embrace.
Well, I did at first, and I don't, you know, it's part of my life, you know, and as I've grown up and especially after I came and became a Christian, I look at it as what it is, you know, it's part of my life, and God used it and uses it now to, I could use whatever my background is. I have a platform to speak in a lot of ways and places because of what I did, you know, and people, you know, I've been all over the world, and people, you know, they know who I was on the show. And it's interesting because, you know, it was part of my life. And now I have it in its right place. You know, it's where it needs to be, you know, which is part of my past, like part of anybody's past that might be in your past.
Right.
You can put that in the past, and, you know, you could bring it back to memory, but it's not part of your everyday life, you know.
And if you could leave a message perhaps for any parent who's thinking of putting a child into child acting, or even a child who's wanting to do something like that, what would your, you know, for mental health and for perhaps not going into an opposite direction or a bad direction, what would you suggest or advise for that type of scenario?
Well, I would say, you know, first of all, don't push them. Yeah. Second of all, you better learn something else besides acting, and don't get caught up in the fluff and the glitz, mm-hmm. and the glamour, because you go to Hollywood, and it's changed some since I've been there, of course, but I think it's just gotten worse in a lot of ways, because it's just, it's just tainted in a lot of ways I enjoy a good movie like anybody else, you know. I enjoy the Andy Griffith Show, I enjoy even the I Love Lucy Show, I enjoy watching it, you know, but it's like there's so much more to reality, you know. Truth is stranger than fiction, or truth is, in a lot of cases, more or reality of the truth is more interesting than fiction can be sometimes. And so I look at it like it's a diversion, you know, but and I'm very careful of what we watch now because of those kinds of things, that there's so much agendas and so many different things that are going on that are people are pushing, and I don't agree. I just don't agree. And what was principles and what was morals and what was standards, you know, even 50 years ago or 60 years ago, are just not the world that was then, you know.
Yeah, especially with social media and things like that.
Yeah, it's kind of like cheapened or something. I don't know what it is. It's like it's gotten more. It's a cheaper type of thing. You know, everything is cheaper. I mean, it's just easier to do. Like, you know, and there's some good tools like podcasts and things like that that you guys are doing. But the whole industry is just cheapened, it's like they're going over different stories. And they're redoing stories that have already been done, that somebody else did, and basically trying to make money off, well, what somebody else did. Let's try to make that. You know, there's no originality other than really dark stuff, you know, which I guess we're coming into a dark time, you know.
Feels that way most times. Yeah, that way. Yeah.
Okay. Well, just to finish up, we had one last question, and that's just, do you have either a favorite show that you enjoyed shoot or episode that you enjoyed shooting on the show, the I Love Lucy show, or just one that you liked in general, either that you were on or not?
Well, I always say anytime I played, you know, my drums, that was a good one. it, you know, the Maurice Chevalier show, which is good. An hour, yeah. Which is really one of the hour shows. Mm-hmm. I really like that. The Superman, George Reeves episode, only because I love George Reeves. And, you know, when he died, my dad knew how much I looked up to him. And he actually, you know, told me that George Superman had slipped in his shower and hit his head and died.
To not kind of tell you what really went on.
Yeah, he didn't tell me like it was a possible suicide or shot, right, or got murdered or whatever. Because he, you know, he knew how much I really idolized Superman, you know, and George Reeves. So those two on that show were probably the ones that really stand out. So, yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Keith, for your time. I know we finally tracked you down and had you sit down and talk to us for a little bit, but we do appreciate it. If you have any tour dates or anything you would like to promote here or anything else you'd like to say.
Well, you know, Ballet Magnificat, our company, will be going up to the Northeast real soon, up in the Massachusetts area. And we're doing a really cool ballet about the Pilgrims and about it's coinciding with the 400th anniversary of the landing of the Pilgrims in America, and just the faith and inspiration that it took for them to do that, come from Europe to come to America. And so we're doing that up there. We've been commissioned to do it, and we'll be doing it in about 4 different theaters. We have the Indian tribe that was part of that. They'll be there. Some of the people will be representing the tribe there. And so we're just touring all over. You can go to balletmagnificat.com, and if you're interested in that, and
we'll link that. Yeah.
Yeah. Balletmagnificat.com. Our tour schedule's on there. Also the band that I play with, David and the Giants, the Christian rock band. We play in various places across the country. Our tour schedule, you can find out either on our Facebook page or davidhuff.com. You can go to that, davidhuff.com, HUFF.com, and you get our music and you can see what we're doing and where we're going.
Well, I'm glad that you still have a love and a passion for performing and that it's never left you. So that's great.
No, yes. I love playing. In fact, I'm endorsing a set of drums called WFLs. Which is a great drum company. It's Bill Ludwig Jr.'s company from the Ludwig Drum Company. He started a new company, so I'm sponsored by that drum company, and so I'm excited about the beautiful set of drums. I'm excited to play them.
Well, thank you very much. Your story is very inspirational, from what could have been to what became and how you came out the other side, and your love of God really shines through you. So we do appreciate you taking the time to speak to us.
Keith, it was just wonderful getting a chance to chit chat and talk with you. It was really great.
Yeah. A pleasure. It was more pleasurable on this side than it was ramping up to this. Because I didn't know either one of you guys, but you guys are really cool, cool people. I appreciate you.
Thank you very much, Keith.
Thank you so much. All right.
Thank you.
Great day.
Bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.